All right. Thanks for coming. I'll be the moderator for this panel. It's mobile, called Mobile Active. We're going to be exploring using cell phones for things, you know, along the lines of, you know, social activism, activism, politics, and in general. We're going to explore what can be done and what has been done. And also, you know, just in the areas of, you know, mobile active doesn't also just means exploring the relationship between the social dynamic that people have with cell phones and what that entails. So we have a very interesting panel. My name is Justin Oberman. I come from the mobile consulting world. Do mobile consulting strategy for myself and for a couple firms. And I also have a blog, which is being relaunched. Hopefully, they've solved some of the problems today. It's called mopocket.com, where I explore and where I and a bunch of other writers explore various aspects, not just politics in the mobile space that has a certain philosophical slant to it. So I'm going to let each one of the panels introduce themselves, and then we're going to go from there. Actually, we're going to explore to see what you guys are interested in speaking after that. So start thinking of your questions now in terms of what you would want to talk about mobile phones, because it's such a new thing that the expertise that's on here is that's on this panel is very vast to answer all these questions. So,
great. Good to be here. My name is Doug Busk, and I am with a company called Single Point. Single Point is what you might call a messaging aggregator. We have serviced in partnership actually with a number of folks up here, presidential candidates, including Barack Obama and John Edwards, as well as a number of other advocacy clients.
My name is Chris Muscarella. I'm the founder and president of products at Mobile Commons. And our whole goal is to sort of make it very easy for campaigns and NGOs to create mobile applications. We work with a number of presidential candidates, big nonprofits like the NRDC and the ACLU.
I'm Katrine Vuklas. I run a blog called Mobile Active, which is the only comprehensive resource out there for how mobiles are used for social impact internationally, globally, and in the U.S. And I also run a mobile consulting firm called Calder Strategy.
My name is James Epperhart. I'm the chairman of Mobile Accord. Mobile Accord works with nonprofit groups in terms of advocacy, fundraising through the mobile phone. Just recently, we launched out the first mobile giving channel in conjunction with the United Way and the NFL that effectively lets you text in donations and shows up on your mobile phone bill.
And that's one issue that I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about in terms of this election cycle, and I'm sure we'll be more than willing to explore that further. I'd like to begin with Catherine, because this panel is duly named Mobile Active after you, I'd really like you to explore, you know, what that means, and I know you have some stuff prepared.
المرأة ديانتها ما تخصش أي حد، منظرها ما يخصش أي حد.
This is an MMS video that's being circulated in Egypt on phones. About 40% of people in Egypt have MMS multimedia messaging capabilities on their phones. And there's a couple of videos that are being circulated in Egypt among human rights activists who are interested in spreading human rights messages on their phones. So just to give you an introduction to some of the ways in which mobiles are being used in politics, small p, as well as large, capital P. But I wanted to just give you a really quick sort of overview to ground the conversation, and then we'll open it up to panelists and to the audience as well to talk about, probably primarily about the U.S., but I'm going to tell you a couple of stories internationally. So there are 3.5 billion phones in the world. We are at an inflection point. where 50% of the population has phones, as the UN estimates, actually this year, as well as a couple of industry researchers. I run a site called Mobile Active, as I said, where we track stories as well as produce resources on how nonprofits and social activists can use mobile phones in their social change work. We are the only comprehensive resource on mobiles for social change on the web. We're a peer community of about 6,000 people. There's 6,000 folks or so, by last count, who are doing really interesting stuff all over the world. We produce a ton of online how-to resources, how to run a text-to-screen campaign, how to effectively message in 160 characters, how to do mobile advocacy down to the nitty-gritty. We're a channel for interesting innovations that are really happening bottom-up, and we evangelize the use of mobiles in the world. So mobile media is a lot of different things. A lot of you use SMS, MMS, the mobile web, clearly. Ringtones, which are used for political purposes, for sure. Games, different applications, data, and then, of course, voice, which we'll talk a lot about, but which we tend to forget occasionally. There's a ton of ways in which mobiles can be used in politics and advocacy, and these are just a few. It's SMS letters or petitions. Greenpeace just launched a huge petition campaign where they generated 1.5 million signatures, 350,000 of which people gave their mobile numbers. So 2 months into it, they had a mobile list of 350,000 people to text to. SMS graffiti, which is a really interesting one that I'm fascinated by, which there's some really interesting grassroots activities that are going to happen probably around the Beijing Olympics, where people are doing some really cool SMS and other sort of graffiti on big displays. Phone calls to legislators, text-to-screen campaigns, mobilizing for events, getting out the vote, mobilizing for elections. So I'll tell you a couple of stories. So you all remember Burma? Now, I would say call that politics. Mobiles being used for citizen reporting and really telling the story and getting it out in a way that traditional media, and certainly not the internet, was capable of doing at the time. Most of the videos there were shot. The pictures, both the pictures and videos, were shot on mobiles. Getting out the vote and polling, election monitoring at international elections. There was an election in Sierra Leone not too long ago where 600 election monitors, volunteers at polling stations, followed a very sophisticated protocol to report election violence or lack thereof and conditions at the polls back to headquarters. It was a citizen group that monitored the election nationally and were credited largely with producing essentially or ensuring a peaceful election. It's the first election in Sierra Leone since independence, and it was critically important. And because there was this massive, it was about 6,000 or so polling stations, and at a tenth of those polling stations, they had monitors, which could quell any rumors that were spreading about the opposition party not getting a fair shake. In the U.S., the student Perks actually in the 2004 election did a very interesting study where they looked at how mobile phones are affecting voter turnout, and it showed that text messaging young voters increased voter turnout anywhere from 3.1 to 4.2%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're trying to swing an election and increasing that with the youth vote is significant, and it turned out it was larger than through phone calls or email communication. A larger increase in turnout. Mobilizations, certainly. Everybody remembers the Orange Revolution, swinging the elections in Spain not too long ago. This is a photo from Greenpeace, actually, in Argentina, which did this really interesting campaign passing the first forest protection law in Argentina, getting, as I said, 1.5 million signatures on the petition, and then they, with their 350,000 people strong mobile list, activated those folks via SMS to call legislators during deliberations of this forest law, which was under some considerable lobbyist pressure to not get passed. It put a moratorium on the deforestation of certain parts of Argentina where there's a loss of a football field an hour of virgin forest. So politicians suddenly got phone calls, lots of phone calls, and that's not something that they're particularly used to in Argentina. So some folks got 300 calls an hour with, you know, people getting a text message on their phone with a phone number. It's not very hard when you get a text message that has a phone number attached to it to then make a call. So they had about a response rate of 20%, 15 to 20%, which is pretty good. SMS info channels, actually that's you guys, Mobile Commons, runs a bunch of info channels where you can text in, for example, in this case, the name of a company to ascertain what's their climate footprint or their carbon footprint. What are their activities vis-a-vis climate change? So you can try it, 30644, text CC in the name of a company, and you'll get a score, essentially, for that particular company and how well it does on a sort of carbon footprint scale. There's a number of these out there, but they can certainly be used for political purposes, you know, find out your closest polling station, you know, message points from candidates, lots of ways. Text-to-screen is another Mobile Commons campaign. That was a California organization, healthcare organization that did a campaign where they had their constituents text in messages to the governor. They put up this big billboard that says, see your text message here, in front of the legislature in Sacramento, and people were texting in really actually quite compelling messages. You can be really eloquent in 160 characters, actually, to urge the governor to pass a comprehensive health care reform bill. At ringtones, there are political ringtones. This is mine. We also have Yes, We Can. It is available at actually a user-generated site called ringtonesor8.com, where we just had some fun producing ringtones. It's really easy to make a ringtone. And there's companies where you can up and download ringtones for free super easily. So if you want to do political ringtones in this election, go to ringtonesor8.com. It's a nice conversation starter at a party for sure.
There are ringtones available at barackobama.com/mobile.
Yeah, they're not as good as ours, honey, though. We do a better job producing ringtones. We mix and match them. It's user-generated. Anyhow. There's really a ton of innovation out there. There's absolutely no limit to good ideas. We track them. We tell the story. So if you do something super interesting, please be in touch. We'll write all about it. We have a big following, media following, and we've been all over. There's actually a spread in The Economist that'll be talking a lot about this in April on mobility, and we'll be hopefully prominently featured. But it is absolutely a mobile revolution. I was walking around here and being sort of antsy about how, you know, everybody's talking about the web, but the connection to mobiles is absolutely, you know, pervasive medium that is so much more, really so much more ubiquitous, the most ubiquitous human communication device in the hands of humans to date. You know, we ought to be talking a lot more. In fact, there should be some South by Southwest mobile pretty soon as far as I'm concerned, but turn it over to you, Justin.
I mean, Mobile Active is an amazing, amazing resource for all sorts of things. I strongly suggest just to begin by visiting the website and getting on the mailing list, because the support groups that are on there. I mean, we're talking, it's the only global support group where a question can get answered on mobile devices, from everything from politics to just, you know, even just general questions about mobile and across the board about the, you know, starting a text message campaign, you know, for just, you know, 10 or 30 people, which in some countries has huge political importance, to starting, you know, countrywide ones as well. So what I want to do do any of the panelists have any thoughts on anything that was just mentioned right there? I know because Mobile Commons has mentioned some things. Do you have any comments on how those campaigns went?
I think one of the ideas that I sort of want to float out there a little bit is, you know, the difference between sort of consumer-generated media on the mobile phones that's engaged in politics and things that are actually being pushed out there by the campaigns themselves. Because they sort of function very differently, where campaigns, you know, they have like an overall media strategy. They have something where they want to be very, very on point. And so they have these very focused sort of mobile campaigns. But, you know, some of the things that have happened in Burma and other things in the Philippines, it's sort of people taking to the streets and using mobile to interact with each other, sort of separate from any sort of organizational body or structure. And I think that's something pretty interesting that we can talk about.
So it's like sort of an organic versus structured approach, where it seems like a lot of the more, you know, influential examples of mobile technology seem to come from some sort of organic growth, where for whatever reasons mobiles are a major part of the society. But I'm curious if the panelists have no other comment on this. What are some of the things that are itching your head in your heads about mobile phones? You came to this panel for a reason. Is there something in particular that you would like us to focus on in the next 45 minutes?
Pop yeah. it out, just popcorn.
Yeah. I'm encouraged to use the mics because this is being recorded. Hello. So anything, I'll have to repeat.
My name is Sunil Doshi. I work for a mobile company. And my question's mostly for Doug, but others also. And it's U.S. specific. And the initial question's broad, but more specifically for SMS. I'm wondering how you guys deal with carrier restrictions, specifically on SMS campaigns. And, you know, you say you're going to do one thing with it, but the campaigns might go ahead and want to do a few different things with it. Do the carriers give you any flack for that? Is it the fact that it's so high profile?
Can I just see a show of hands? How many of you have run an SMS campaign and sort of know what's involved? How many of you are completely clueless about how any of this mobile shit works and need to have a little primer? And how many of you are sort of in between and kind of feel like maybe a little bit? All right, so maybe we can weave in a little bit of the sort of background info on how this works.
First let me say it's nice to be able to come to a show and actually not be with the carrier and have to formally represent them and then worry about getting fired when I come back, based on what I said. That in and of itself is progress. The reality is that the U.S. carriers have slowly but surely been getting quite a bit looser about what they allow through what I'm loosely going to call their pipes, which are anybody who's connecting into them for any reason. SinglePoint is an aggregator, and what we do in that capacity is provide developers with APIs so that you can develop or web-based interfaces if you don't want to develop towards an API, if you don't want to develop your own application. You don't have to. You can use a web-based interface and be up and running in literally 15 minutes' time. I could step outside and show you how to do that on a laptop very easily. What the carriers are allowing once you gain that original permission, which is a process that depending on, you know, the aggregator you choose, us or any one of our fine competitors, there are about a dozen of them in the States. You can work with any one of the application suppliers or aggregators up here, Mobile Accord, MCommons among them. Once you get past that original 4-week, 5-week clearance, you find that there really isn't an issue on most of the things that this audience might do. Carriers are most concerned about what happens with premium charges on their bills. What happens with a ringtone subscription that is $10 a month that somehow goes awry and causes a lot of calls into customer care. That's their top concern. It's not to suggest that advocacy or anything nonprofit is under the radar, but generally when you're sending and receiving messages, whether you're a Twitter or a Yahoo IM or sending out messages on behalf of Greenpeace, the carrier by and large is encouraging that and is enabling that today. So there's not quite that.
But you still need to go through the permission process.
You still have to gain the carrier's permission to deliver the messages over their network. Absolutely.
And you can get turned down for certain things.
I mean, I sort of want to address that a little bit because we actually had that experience with Mobile Commons where, one of our customers was NARAL, which is Women's Rights. And so we have a short code which we're provisioned to send sort of whatever kind of messages we want in the cause-related space. And NARAL came to us and they wanted to do campaigns. And we said, great. And so, you know, we thought that we were just submitting a sort of very casual request for permission, and it was accepted by all the carriers, but it was turned down by Verizon. And they turned it down on the basis of it being unsavory content, and that the only way that that sort of thing could go through their pipes is like if it were a political campaign and they were talking about specific things. It's sort of this very strange sort of legal form letter. And our experience with that was pretty interesting because we called Verizon and said, are you serious? And they said, yes. And we called one of our friends at the New York Times and told him about it. And, a few days later, it was on the front page of the New York Times. And, Verizon, I think, had something like 250,000 phone calls from angry customers saying, what are you doing?
Which would be those calls into customer care I mentioned that they don't like.
Which is sort of ridiculous. So,
within 20 minutes, they said it was stupid and rescinded the policy.
But I think that some of those things are sort of out of the woods, but there's still sort of a whole range of openness that sort of still has yet to be addressed in the mobile universe. And one of the things that's really sort of complicated about mobile is it's not an environment like the internet, which sort of grew up away from any sort of business interest or anything like that. It's a very complicated ecosystem where you have a lot of different stakeholders, and so standards are going to be sort of agreed upon more slowly, and things are going to be sort of slower to open up.
At the same time that there is concerns. How many people get spam emails coming through their box every day? Spam has become such a problem, and so there is a concerns that are put in place by the carriers where last thing you want is to have SMSs coming through that are spamming you on a day-to-day basis. So there is an important piece of it is protecting and preserving the channel of SMS so you don't have floods of messages coming through that are spamming you on a day-to-day basis. The mobile channel, every SMS you get, it's instantaneous, you look at it, and you enact on it, whether it's a friend, whether it's a call to action. But at the same point in time, it is very important that the SMS channel is protected so we don't get into a place where you receive hundreds and hundreds of spam SMSs on a day-to-day basis.
Is there anything else that's on anyone's mind? What I want to do is to do kind of what we did last time, where people just spat out ideas, and then we can take it from there. If not, there's other things that we can address. But we're just going to spit out. We're not going to answer these right away. We'll get to them, but we'll spit them out.
I have a lot to say about that.
We'll answer. So, as a technologist and as somebody sort of building applications for the mobile space, one of the things about the mobile application sort of stack is combining those different elements. And that's something that we pay a lot of attention to at Mobile Commons. And we actually have integrated voice and messaging capabilities. So, and a lot of people are sort of beginning to look at that. Like when you use sort of more consumer-facing services, like you use, Google 411, you can get a follow-up SMS message. You use Tell Me free services, you can get like a little picture sort of SMS message. And that type of thing is going to be sort of much more ubiquitous going forward. And so, I think that there are people that are really sort of beginning to look at that. And some of the interesting things is not just how that plays into mobile with, SMS and voice, but also how that plays into the web. And what does it mean when you sort of have voice that can go across mobile, be initiated from the web, and kind of be used from these different mediums. And you're going to see like a whole sort of new range of sort of mashup applications happening in that space. And a lot of our customers are actually using voice now for their campaigns. Like Edwards did a fundraising campaign, which was Ann Coulter attacked Elizabeth Edwards. And Edwards did a little fundraising campaign at the end of the quarter around that, where Elizabeth was sort of talking about the Ann Coulter thing and then sort of asking for money and patching people through to a call center afterwards. Same things like congressional call-in campaigns. That's a big part of what our customers do, where you're getting a message on your handset. They can reply with a text message, or they can sort of just click a button on their phone and have the voice component just kick them in and connect them directly to their congressperson. So people are beginning to do that, but it's sort of like a new way of thinking about things. So it's beginning to catch on.
Well,
it depends on where you are in the world, right? So in the U.S., voice is cheap. Everywhere else in a lot of places, internationally, Africa, Asia, voice is expensive. And so SMS rules, because SMS is cheap, incredibly, ubiquitous. It works when voice doesn't work in iffy, environments where the coverage isn't that great. So, if you're in rural Rwanda, chances are you get an SMS message to get delivered, whereas, you know, voice, you pay an arm and a leg, you're poor, and the coverage, you know, is definitely not that great. So depending on where you are, you know, it really varies. And so SMS, as the lowest common denominator in the mobile world, you know, has a huge role to play, you know, whatever, 2 trillion SMS, whatever that recent data was. So it's amazing.
And I think an interesting thing to look to just for clues about that kind of thing is some of the things that have happened with more consumer-facing applications. There's a startup called TellMe, you know, which spent several $100 million trying to build like an interactive voice interface to the web, to lots of other types of information. And they sort of realized that people didn't totally want that. And so, you know, people do want voice for some things, but not for other things. And it's sort of interesting to see how that's panning out. And it's different in different geographic areas. Like, for example, like in a very broadband-rich country like the U.S., people are very used to sort of rich information experiences on the phone. They kind of want that on the phone. Mm-hmm. Things are moving in that direction. Whereas in places like India, places like Africa, you know, they don't have a web experience. And so there's actually tremendous usage of services where they're parsing web pages into SMS messages and sort of sending those out to people's phones.
I think a lot of our clients on the entertainment side have been very quick to grab on, especially in the U.S. environment, 1-800 for kicking off an SMS experience. I think what we saw in the first couple of years of SMS and really data product development in the United States is that there was an association right out of the gate with being very siloed, being very vertically oriented about which tools you used in mobile. So a company might choose SMS and only use a short code to kick off SMS, or they might be a mobile web company or a mobile web tools provider and assume that somebody's going to open up the browser on their phone and manually enter a mobile web address. What we've seen in the last year is, again, you know, for lack of a better term, a lot of mashup going on in the space where you might, you know, send, you know, call in for your participation in a deal or no deal sweepstakes, and that would be on an 800 number. And an SMS may come down to you indicating that you had, you know, you were a part of the experience. And in that SMS, there might be the opportunity to click on a WAP link and then move over to mobile web. So I think a lot of the innovation is happening in these, you know, in these areas where people are taking advantage of each one of the mobile capabilities to drive what makes the most sense for their campaign and for their audience. There's certain audiences, especially teen and tween, that they understand the lingo, they understand short code, they know what that means. They view short code as a alternative form of a URL. They get it. They have no problem participating in it. There's other audiences, frankly, some sort of demographically limited, some not, that you're going to want to offer a 1-800 number option. And then they learn only when they receive a message afterwards. Wow, I got an SMS back from that. A lot of the innovation is very corporate in that space. You know, airlines, as an example, saying, would you like a reminder SMS? Orbitz has been doing a ton of work around this. Every time that an event like that happens in a corporate environment, it helps those of us that want to extend what might be a web or phone or voice phone-based experience to data.
So I just pulled up this site, Say Now, which is huge in the entertainment industry, where stars or whatever, musicians can send messages to their fans and messages can send back to voicemail messages, sent back to the stars. And it's an African-American audience. And so you are looking at, and it's a young African-American audience, and so you're looking at a particular segment that, you know, you want to reach with voice. And political campaigns are really behind in this, or advocacy organizations, you know, they're not that technically savvy in so many ways, particularly in the mobile realm. And so looking at what's happening in other spaces, looking at the commercial sector, you know, I mean, you don't see a single politician on there, but hey, why isn't Obama sending out voicemail messages to an audience that he's trying to reach? Absolutely zero reason. Or for that matter, have a way for, you know, supporters to call back or to get, you know, talking points on their phone, as, you know, SMS is limited in what it can deliver. And so getting talking points, getting voice, you know, briefing points, getting volunteer information. There's lots of ways in which you could extend that to politics and advocacy. And, you know, I'm still sort of stunned that this is not happening more.
Well, I'm
impatient in that regard.
I think a lot of our customers do that. A lot of our customers do use our application to create audio talking points. NRDC does things about like nuclear proliferation. They use Bonnie Raitt as their spokesperson. And when there's sort of call-in campaigns they want to do, you call in and you hear Bonnie Raitt sort of taking you through the talking points. You know, same thing when people have used some IVR opt-ins using our stack. And I think that it's something that
it's still novelty. It's novelty.
I don't think it's novelty. It's understanding how it fits into the overall media strategy.
Right.
And you know, that's the part that takes the time.
I think there's also a way that campaigns themselves on the ground can also use voice. I remember at the very first Mobile Active Conference, we talked about the new technology. Well, not new, but the one that everyone was excited about. Asterisk. Which I don't try. There was a whole big pronunciation debate about it, but which is a technology that's...
it's an open source PBX
right.
system. You know. You all shake. I mean, nod your head.
Right.
The thing you have to remember about political campaigns, especially, is they're you know, command control. They want control over their message at all times. So there is a media strategy there. There is a messaging strategy there, and I think that does mean they come late to the newer technologies. I mean, when Jerry Brown said in a debate in 1988, you know, call my 1-800 number, the New York Times ran with a story about how shockingly innovative it was. When Americans have been ordering Ronco over, you know, 1-800 for years, the Dean campaign heralded the arrival, quote unquote, of email as an effective outreach and donation, generation resource. When in fact, business have been using that for years. So we're seeing that with sort of mobile come in. I mean, it's occasionally it's a space that I sort of joke where faxing is considered really quite cool. So it takes a while for political campaigns to catch up because they have to trust it and they have to see the value in it. But if you look at, it's funny how technology inserts itself and forces the space to innovate. There was online video in 2000. There was online video in 2002. There was online video in 2004. But I would submit that after the Allen campaign had its macaca moment in the 06 round, and the impact that had, there's not a lot of campaigns out there that deny the power of online video. Many of the most striking ads you're seeing in this cycle are user generated and hosted in YouTube or in online, you know, on some other online forum. So I think we'll see the same with mobile, that the innovation may in fact not necessarily come from a formal campaign structure. It's going to come from this audience. It's going to come from this crowd.
Except it's much more of a walled garden in that sense. I mean, the innovation is harder to, I mean, dial-up radio is a good example of. It's an audio based on Asterisk, a grassroots effort where you can upload audio files that then can be delivered. You can text in and the system calls you back. Or you can call the system and you get audio files served, essentially. It's being used in Zimbabwe. They want to use it in the upcoming election, but to make it sort of politically palatable, it's actually under the guise of a sexual health information service for young people that educates them about HIV/AIDS prevention. It's so not ready for prime time. You know, it's not enterprise ready for a campaign. It's a really great idea, and it's being used in innovative ways. And there's an Asian foreclosure hotline that actually serves audio files in major Asian languages to help people who are affected by possible foreclosure, directs them to resources and so on. And there's an interactive way in which you can get phone numbers sent to you via SMS, and you can choose through a Asterisk voice sort of command system, whatever, one for information about your region and so on. So, and it has a lot of information that couldn't be delivered any other way. A, it's in the appropriate languages, and B, it's long content. But, it has lots of technical difficulties. So, yes, there could be innovation from the bottom up, but to scale that and to really make it sort of enterprise ready for large scale campaigns, I think you're going to need some serious vendors and have to go through sort of official channels, if you will, and then you're dealing with innovation sort of slows down at that level, sadly.
No, I mean I this is something that is a large interest of mine in terms of this sort of organic ubiquity, like where do you catch this person with the text message? Why is this person going to get involved in the text message? And if you look at the top down model, the top down approaches, the structured approaches, and the organic approaches, right now I think it's safe to say that the organic approaches are winning in terms of successfulness. Most of the campaigns, the most popular example being the People Power 2 demonstration in the Philippines. These happened, you know, in a loose sort of structured but very organic way, where a text message just went out: "Go to ETSA Square, wear black to mourn the death of democracy." Because text messaging was the major mode of communication because of its cheapness, it spread like wildfire. There's other factors that played into here. There was a huge web presence. There was also a huge media presence that helped in the spread of this. But the issue now is how the political campaigns can tap that type of
It is happening bottom up. Like, look behind you. Your Mama for Obama is an effort by some interesting people who happen to just be in the room. Actually, I see one.
Shane has apparently not given the option not to say hello.
Anyway, you tell him. What's Your Mama for Obama?
No, it's interesting. A group of friends of mine who've worked both in politics and in entertainment on sort of more the sort of music marketing side came up with this campaign. And the goal is really to do both sort of a combo mobile, online, offline, using mobile to reach a younger demographic that's more amenable to it, but to urge them to use word of mouth to talk to their parents and older folks around Obama's candidacy. But I was going to get up and ask. I've worked off and on for Move On for the last two cycles. Like, the strongest advocacy, or the most influential advocacy organizations, I think, recently, their growth from email has been through viral distribution and peer-to-peer stuff. And we haven't seen that, really. I mean, like, we sort of tried to spark this. We're going to do some audiophile stuff and some song. We're trying to get the Far Side to re-record their Your Mama song, which would be really fun if it happens. But I think there's, we haven't seen that moment in the U.S. yet. Like in the Polish election, right, where people sent the steal your grandma's ID message, and then it got press, and then it cycled. Like, we haven't seen that yet in a mobile advocacy.
Well, except for the immigration rallies. I mean, and that there's this moment in time, right? So at the immigration rallies, which weren't as organic as they were made out to be, there was a lot of hardcore organizing behind that. But there was viral spread of sort of, you know, semi-spontaneous, at least forwarding of text messages to go to a rally at a particular point in time. And again, there was a lot of organizing which was not covered by the press that was behind the scenes there. So it wasn't the spontaneous
radio
uprising.
I think that's the thing that's really interesting about that, too, is the cross-media platform, right? Is that the Latino radio, hugely, you know what I mean? Like, the guys in morning radio in L.A., like, every day talking about that stuff, like, helping to drive that forwarding. And I think that's the other thing that we need to look at. I managed the SMS campaign for the Live Earth concerts last summer, which had lots of integration.
Can you tell people who you are?
Hi, my name's Catherine Generakis. Hi, and I still manage Interactive for Live Earth, which we have more stuff coming this fall. We're not done, as it turns out. But we had extensive broadcast integration, for example, through the concerts for SMS messaging. We got plenty of pickup, but it was not the wildfire of American Idol that you would, hope for. And I think we're still at a stage where people aren't that conversion moment. Wherever they see your call to action, there's still hesitation. We're still it's a relatively narrow demographic. I don't think very many folks have figured out the combination of correct call to action and demographic target to make it more of a norm than it is now. So I'm just be curious to hear what you guys think. Like, what's
what are the critical
that?
Factors there? Right?
Like,
yeah,
what's,
I mean, does mobile need a magic moment?
Yeah, you're still
mobile needs a magic moment.
Yeah, I think where's the tipping point? Where's the inflection point? I mean, even in circles that are sort of like American Idol circles, producers of television in the U.S. that have come out of many of them out of Europe, where they have a ton of experience and background to build off of there. It's different between cultures. The call to action that's going to be impactful is different among groups, as you mentioned. What works in some environments and for some purposes doesn't necessarily in others. I think one of the sort of one of the things that I found really amazing that the Obama campaign did do is leverage, as an example, sort of these little signals we get of what is working. They decided to leverage the two-way nature of SMS, that it was very hidden. And they the original thought was, we'll broadcast a message out to our audience. We'll encourage people to sign up online via short code and elsewhere, rallies, et cetera. You know, good, solid call to action, consistent integration in the website. All of the Obama campaign's credit. I mean, they were very serious about it being not an island. It had to be integrated into their nav. It had to be integrated into their media and messaging plan. I think very, very tight. But one thing they did, which was brilliant, was actually respect people and listen to people when they wrote back. When you sent an SMS down and some people were writing back, what is the senator's position on Iraq? What is the senator's position on universal health care?
Which ends up in the catch-all.
Which ends up, you know, getting fed into a file that's delivered to the campaign, and they answer it. If they're legitimate questions, they go back and find an answer. It's tough to fit an answer in universal health care in 160 characters, but they do the best they can. And you know, that was one of those moments. So we are still looking for those moments of genius. And is there the perfect call to action? Is it going to work in live Earth when it's, you know, is when it may or may not work in a Super Bowl ad? We're still experimenting. I'm not going to lie to you. And the other point I mentioned that you hit on, which is an issue, especially for a lot of developers who come out of an IP-based environment, analytics and tracking is tough in mobile. Absolutely, I'm not going to lie to you about that. That is hard. And when you talk about word of mouth, you know, Live Earth may have had a tough time getting people to sign up for, you know, an in-venue. Or I don't know how you did your call to action.
It was interesting because our in-venue was phenomenal.
Was through the roof, right?
Broadcast
was less so. So, I mean, what you also don't see is all the messages going in between people at the show about the show or the candidate or the cause. Whereas with email, you've got tracking on images, you've got tracking on open, you've got tracking on bounce. I mean, there's all these other analytics that you don't quite have in mobile because of the nature of the technology. And because, you know, maybe a carrier's in between you and that, but carriers don't read carriers don't read the SMS messages going between people, so it's very tough to know.
They can see the spike, though, right?
I mean, they can see.
Yes, absolutely, and they do prepare for that, and that's a big deal. I mean, that's one of the things we focus on as a company is preparing carriers for that. They want to know when there's going to be a big event.
Can I ask too? Just I was in a very entertainment-y meeting this week where talking about how more and more public concert venues are integrating permanent text to screen stuff. So it's becoming more like at the Wiltern in LA. I don't care what show you go to, there's text to screen in your experience. Can you guys talk about that at all and whether do you think that's going to have much of an impact?
Mobile Commons has done a lot of work.
I mean, we try and blur a lot of the boundaries between the web and mobile. And one of the things that people have done using our software is, you know, they'll do text to screen at a live event, but then they'll also take that message, and it's very easy to sort of configure. You know, we have an action script toolkit, or they can sort of build a little flash widget themselves, and they can syndicate those messages across the web. So any supporter can grab that little flash badge, put it on their website, and have that sort of incoming stream of things. I mean, one of the things that I'm personally curious to see that none of our customers have done quite yet is sort of combining that stream of messages with some live video of people sort of responding to those messages. And I think that's something the way that they had the video and the SMS wasn't, like, there were certain parts that were simulcast and certain parts that weren't. Like, it would have been like Schwarzenegger wouldn't have done this, but like the idea of having Schwarzenegger on camera sort of responding to those questions as they come in. But you know, one of the things that I just want to address a little bit too is that, like, you know, people that are sort of looking at the media and stuff like this are always looking for this magic bullet that you can create a viral campaign. And I don't totally buy into that. I mean, you know, Duncan Watts just wrote a great piece for the Tipping Point, or for Fast Company magazine, sort of debunking the Tipping Point, saying like this idea that you can create something that goes viral and that you can do that replicably, like over and over and over again, is something that nobody can really do. And so, you know, with mobile, there hasn't been that viral moment yet. But in this country. But I think that will definitely happen at some point in the very near future. And certain people have had a lot of success. Like the Obama campaign has a huge mobile subscriber list. And, you know, like at some point there will be some incendiary thing which really sort of ignites that and sets it off. But it's really about sort of finding that right moment. And that will be, you know, a big medium.
maybe you can MMS a ringtone. I'll just teach you. Or SMS a link to mix.
True, unless you have an iPhone or unless you don't have an MMS plan.
Yeah,
well, you know, unless, you know, which in the U.S. is an issue, because the U.S. is one of is unique in the sense that there are two different technologies roaming around that have a hard time speaking with each other.
Well, and multiple different handset types and OS types and effects on the Bluetooth stack based on what the carrier's done. I mean, the caveats suck. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and that's part of the reason that SMS and voice and mixing those two together, and increasingly in the U.S. mobile web, you know, the idea of including a small URL in an SMS or a small click to call in an SMS have gained a lot of legs. I mean, a lot of companies we work with are experimenting to cross the threshold you're speaking to, this cross-carrier divide or cross-device divide, by enabling someone to click on a call or click on an SMS reply with their friend's number, okay? And then the network, the aggregator, takes care of figuring out what phone they have and then delivers the object down to them. Gifting is happening that way. The challenge you're describing is massive because these networks have been set up differently. And although we all dream of an open access future, we're still some time away from that. I mean, we can pray and hope and talk to our friends from Google who are here and see if they'll buy the spectrum and fix all the wrongs of the, you know, carrier business. But this has been said for years and years and years. And I don't, you know, I'm not entirely sure that this particular administration would be helpful on that front. So, the reality is that there are caveats there, but the technology is enabling you with the tools to overcome challenges like this. I do wish it was easier, and we work harder to, all of us up here work harder to make it easier, but these are not PCs.
But this They're is from a, this is, so this is a really interesting question, because this is from a campaign perspective, right? Where you want to deliver something. I mean, even Ringtones 08, you know, wants to deliver something in some sense, even though it's user generated, blah, blah, blah. But if you think about it, and there's an article today, this is today's New York Times, text generation gap, talks about how young people are really constantly in touch with one another. And there's a term for it. It's phatic communication, right? We are all in this as well in so many ways. This, Twitter, this constant, we are all connected at all times at this point. And for teenagers, I have a daughter who's a teenager, it's absolutely always there. And news spreads, incredibly interesting. I mean, there's a socialization aspect to it. You know, it's like the monkeys, like constantly, you know, lysing each other. I mean, you know, it's like the text message is the equivalent of the scratching each other's back. But you constantly sort of check in and, you know, how are you doing, what's going on, da, da, da. So this, and news spreads incredibly efficiently through this. Incredibly. I mean,
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think the ultimate irony of this article is notice the ad that's right next to it. And this is a big move in the U.S. business. And the unlimited trend in the U.S., which is very recent, which was brought on by this case, you know, kicked off by one carrier and then the next carrier matches it. How you get to commoditization in the United States and universal access in many ways usually comes out of something like this. A flat rate war breaks out, an unlimited war breaks out, and then all of a sudden the inhibitors that were there for pricing reasons. Remember when we were talking about kilobyte download charges in the online realm, right? The resistance to sending and receiving a message goes down every time a carrier offers a package like this. And thank God there's lots of consumers like the one pictured here that are driving their parents to get unlimited texting packages. I mean, the biggest question I used to get 2 years ago was from marketers of all sorts, advocacy or corporate, was, well, don't people pay for each? Remember we got this question? Don't they pay for every message? In a year, that's not going to matter because most people are going to be on some form of an unlimited package. I mean, BlackBerry users don't walk around saying, God, I hope somebody doesn't send me another email. You know, they go into a train spotting moment when the servers go down in Canada. You know, I mean, so the same is going to happen, the same is going to happen in this space because of that. So I thought that was really interesting juxtaposition.
Thank you.
Well, does that stop? I mean, there's okay, in a realm where we're all concerned about our privacy on a relative basis, you know, right, in the U.S. and different countries for other sorts of reasons, has that stopped to move on from being successful in leveraging email and web? I would submit no. And, I mean, it's the same. By the way, these corporations, you know, aren't many and varied at this point. They're becoming fewer and fewer, right? So Verizon wants you to use email on your DSL. Verizon's going to want you to consume SMSs on your phone, presumably. So, yeah. Well, sure. Russia's very excited about
absolutely. The networks get shut down prior to elections because regimes have realized that mobile phone channels are incredibly powerful in mobilizing people and whatnot, good and bad, right? Spreading rumors. I mean, Sierra Leone is fascinating. Rumors spread via SMS equally as fast as you know, election results from the polling stations were fed back and then publicized on radio. So you get, you know, Kenya violence was incited via SMS. There's plenty of ways in which, you know, SMS is used for nefarious purposes. But as far as competition is a good thing in this regard. There really are not very many countries left that have monopolies. And even, I mean, you know, there is Burma, Myanmar. they're those, but they're really, really far in between at this point. And their security, I mean, activists who really are in sensitive political environments and are doing sensitive political work are taking great precautions. We actually published a security guide where we interviewed a bunch of people anonymously on how they are protecting themselves. So you change SIM cards, you change phones, you never leave your phone on, you take the battery out. You know, you never leave your phone on, you know, anywhere where you're having a private conversation. You, you know, a lot of places are now requiring you to register for a SIM card. So you buy SIM cards in other countries where you don't have to register. And then, you know, lots and lots of different ways. If you're really engaged in sensitive political and human rights work, yeah, it's not a secure channel at all. And you have to be highly aware of that. But at the same time, there are ways in which you know, can protect yourself the same way that you would in an online environment.
Yeah. But I also think just one of the things there that's going to be interesting is the internet is going to be a real disruptor there. Just like, you know, you look at the interface on the iPhone SMS app and you look at iChat on a Mac and they're almost the same. And I think that there's going to be sort of an interesting convergence that happens there with sort of IM, SMS, sort of asynchronous short sort of protocols merging together. And, you know, as it happens, as more elements of that network become TCP/IP based, the carriers are going to have to, like, sort of play ball with the internet or, you know, things will shift in the internet. And that's interesting.
If you want to see an extremely good example of how a political regime has dealt with this, I mean, one only needs to look at China in terms of the way that they've dealt with text messaging, political situations, one of them being the SARS outbreak. They let it happen. They let the text messages go out saying of people saying that, you know, no, that there's really a virus out there. It's killing a lot of people. This was an example. The Chinese government says, well, we're not going to monitor all of these. We're not going to put the manpower to monitor all of these. They let it happen. And then they just use their own political brain power to say, okay, you're going to believe all these text messages. You're right. This is a medical issue. They reversed it. And you said, are you going to believe all these people or are you going to believe us? So they actually
they're also busting organizers of some of the peasant uprisings that are happening by the thousands a day that are primarily organized by SMS.
Right,
so it's not all that, you know, happy here in China.
No, I wasn't saying that it was happy, but I'm saying in terms of what was just mentioned, in terms of even when things become more, you know, IP-based and less in terms of like monitoring text messages, it'll be very interesting to actually see what happens in 2008 with the Olympics in terms of, you know, China Mobile's role expanding westward and how they're going to let people that are there on the SIM cards and monitoring and all that kind of stuff. It would be very interesting to see.
Right now, Zimbabwe is really interesting to me because there's an election. It's a highly repressive regime, and there's a huge amount of activism going on. And it's coming both from within country and outside of the country. And there's, you know, some really interesting sort of particularly SMS and radio combinations that are happening. And then there's, you know, tools. We did an analysis of a couple of desktop SMS tools where you essentially run a campaign. Sort of, you know, you have the enterprise version of Mobile Accord and Mobile Commons vendor, but you can run grassroots campaigns literally by plugging into a phone, into your laptop and running, you know, phone numbers through it and bulk mailing.
Get an unlimited package if you do.
Yeah. What's Ken Banks thing called?
It's frontline SMS. So it's frontline SMS. There's a bunch of others. So we did kind of a tool analysis. What is each of these good for? What are they useful for? What is the functionality? Where do they break down? How easy are they to install? What's the blah, blah, blah. So you do this and, you know, sooner or later you'll get shut down, and at least in the U.S. In other countries, you can do this a whole lot more unmonitored, uncensored in many ways. But, you know, if you start to spike a certain amount of traffic, yeah, there's going to be some attention paid to.
Also, there's like a psychological element that we've noticed. I mean, one of the things that we learned in the first mobile active session, I remember it was Bukenny's example, with the power that one cell phone has in a village in terms of the cell phone in the country, the government is they're very obviously afraid of it because we see that the way they react to it, but they really view it as, okay, now the eyes of the world are on us because the citizens have the cell phones. They can call out, they can do all this. This is why North Korea, by the way, has no cell phone at all. No one is allowed to own a cell phone, so they smuggle them in from China, of all places. But at the same time, when you know, the president of Iran, whose name I don't even say for various reasons, but he, when a joke was spread about him, about how he's, you know, he's in hell, and it was spread over text messaging, he went and he shut down the networks immediately. That's in the New York Times. Look, Iran, they're not letting their, you know, he's all speaking about how it's a democracy over there. So you're going to, I believe that you're actually going to see less and less of that, because the world eye, you know, every time a country shuts down their text messaging, it's exposed, and it's exposed, and it's not healthy. And more, especially what was shut down was IranCell, which is actually 49% owned by a South African company, which is, you know, for their own reasons,
ironic,
you know, yeah. That, but they're also wary on these types of these issues from their own past issues.
The phatic communication from the Zuckerberg panel is quite interesting on Twitter. I don't know whether you'll follow it. So. We're doing better, I think.
I'm glad you asked that question. I think Mobile Commons, actually, you have the ASPCA. What was the example?
ASPCA.
Yeah, the ASPCA example.
The age
group that wanted to learn how to do it.
I think the mean age of Texas is only 39 years old, so it's actually quite a bit higher than you think. And I think that one of the things that we think about when we sort of look at usage patterns and things like that is, grandparents, things like that, are sort of beginning, they want to be able to interact with their grandkids over text message. They realize, oh, this is the best way to get a hold of them. And there are ways to sort of initiate that user experience where you can do it with a phone call, or you can do it from a web page, where they don't have to understand this idea of like sending to a short code rather than a person. They just get a message on their phone, and then they can reply to it. And it's like they have like a little channel that they can interact with.
Yeah, Nielsen has some great numbers on this. The answer is the demographics are growing sort of deeper and wider. So the use is growing deeper. We're sort of in the second, almost the third collegiate generation that is addicted to SMS. It is a primary mechanism for them. Business Week does a poll annually on your preferred, what is your preferred choice of communicating when you get into the professional world? And I graduated college in 96. When we came out, it was, you know, email was just coming online as that will be our preferred method. Now, yeah, you wouldn't believe it. This is what happens to you. Yeah, I look like you graduated in 82. Welcome to the telephony business. hairline was here, and, you know, 2 carriers later. So it is growing a lot deeper, given that you're now looking at sort of the second or third collegiate group that's come out saying, SMS, I have to have it, I have to use it. That's my preferred method of communication. They're the ones driving actually a lot of these unlimited packages, at least on the messaging side. But it's also growing a lot wider because the applications that are being advertised and the market is catching up to these other areas of opportunities. I mean, Nielsen's numbers suggest that only 10% of the audience, the potential audience of maybe 180 some odd million in the U.S., that could do pay for something over an SMS, a premium SMS, did last year. 10%. Now, does that mean the other 90%, there's nothing interesting to them there? It means the applications are catching up. It means the market is catching up. The opportunity is therefore enormous. There's been things like, you see, and New York Times had a story on phones targeting 6 to 9 year olds now, the so-called chaperone phones. Mm-hmm. LeapFrog has a quasi phone that's coming out for very, very young audiences, Firefly. and a company called Firefly as well. A company called Jitterbug offers a phone for the 60 plus segment. You open up the phone, it's larger numbers on the phone. There's a dial tone when you open the phone. That's very important. I understand the McCain campaign is very excited. I'm joking. That's a joke. There are going to be other handsets out there that, and markets will be penetrated.
Well, there's interesting stuff happening in the commercial sector that is, mothers, women in their 40s who want to keep up with their teenagers are one of the fastest growing segments of the American market. And they're primarily taught to use SMS. Actually, there's really good stuff in their article about it by their children. And then there's a market. There was a commercial example that was just really interesting. There was a gas company in the Midwest that was doing a promotion to send gas price increase alerts out to customers who wanted to know when gas prices are going up. So the day before, they get a text message that said,
sort of the creeping acceptance, what I call it,
is
sort of the creeping acceptance of SMS. Every time somebody gets an airline alert or a gas price alert.
Or the 411, right? If you want to, in many, many parts of the country now, you can say, press 1 if you would like a text message sent with a phone number. So those kinds of things, are speaking to an audience that is not accustomed to this yet, but where there's really increasing getting used to the fact. Mm-hmm. And making it really easy, provide a 1-800 number. 1-800 number to actually sign up for a text alert was way more successful than a short code to text in to get a text message back. Seems completely counterintuitive to me. Two different channels. But that was the way, it was like people in their 50s and 60s from the Midwest who wanted to save a buck. And you know what? They called 1-800. Like overwhelmingly over texting to a short code. So, if you're thinking about this, well, make it easy. Make it so that that audience, if you want to deliver a content, make it easy so that audience can, sign up in a way that's comfortable and familiar to them. And a 1-800 number is, a no-brainer at this point.
Education is a big issue. We have a question over here. How many more people have questions? Because we have to round up. So these are the last 3 questions, and then we'll close up.
So I work at UT, and we're trying to use text messaging for like emergency sessions, like a shooter on campus or tornado or something like that. When they tested it out, it actually ended up not working because the rollout to get 50,000 IMs out or text messages out, by the time students were getting it, a little bit at a time, it was about 25 minutes from the time that they like actually sent it. Are y'all having that kind of issue?
Can I ask how you?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You shouldn't have that long.
Not the best provider.
Okay. That's what I was curious about. If it was like a provider thing or if it was.
Our systems and many of all of us up here deliver at sort of, thousands of messages per second. Okay. It really shouldn't be an issue on the application side. What's happened a lot of these instances, and this really does impact us in the business, impacts me personally from a public safety perspective. I find this frightening that a lot of these tests have been done using indirect connections, or they're sending messages to every carrier has an open SMTP gateway like Verizon. It's VText. You can do my phone number at vtext.com. Okay. These gateways have the tightest spam protection on them, as was mentioned earlier, that you can believe. They are not commercial grade. Using Twitter would be better because Twitter actually has a direct connection and a short code with the carriers. If you get a message on your phone that comes from an email address, it's going through one of these gateways. And if you're sending into that gateway, you're going to be trapped and throttled. because the carrier doesn't know you and they don't want unsolicited messages showing up on people's phones. So in many of these examples in school settings, the first thing I say is please, please, please use an application provider and get a direct connection, because those numbers that have come out, bad test set up in, bad data out. So that's simply the reality there.
It should take you less than a minute to send out 50,000.
Really? Okay, cool.
But internationally, I mean, having looked at this, actually, I did a report. I'm doing a report for the UN Foundation on using cell phones in disaster preparedness and humanitarian relief. And it is true that SMS is actually not really enterprise grade yet enough to do mass alerts, particularly not if you are, in environments where the infrastructure isn't that great yet. Although right. that's increasing.
There's alternatives like cell broadcasts that can be looked into, but they're not rolled out in many of these markets.
But for early warnings and alerts, you know, general broadcast radio and television is actually more effective.
It's part of a mix. TV, online, email, and mobile should all be part of a holistic plan.
But post-disaster, interestingly enough, post-disaster, SMS is the most critical piece. So the faster the infrastructure, the mobile infrastructure is rebuilt, the more effective the both the delivery of supplies, the reconnecting with family, as well as the sort of redevelopment is happening. So the faster the mobile infrastructure, it's the one crucial factor post disaster that actually makes the difference.
Thanks.
Yeah. Next question.
What do you see as what are you seeing right now with video on mobile devices?
With video, I think it's certainly a space that's growing among our entertainment clientele. There's a very big interest. I think you will start to see more of it coming into next year and the latter end of this year for reasons I can explain sort of after the panel. But the reality is, links to streaming video, the mobile version of Facebook, YouTube, all the MySpace, they're enabling streaming today, typically through a WAP session. So it is growing. I would say that about 65% of the total U.S. subscriber audience can accept a picture or video message, an MMS message. It's just a matter of bringing the market up to speed to target it. So I think it's going to be a very big topic as we get into the closer to the end of this year. And again, Katrin brought up YouTube as an example. I mean, it is doing very well. And I understand a lot of the usage in the iPhone that they were bragging about in the SDK session in California, 2 days ago. Is off of video, is off of, mobile YouTube on the iPhone. So
any other comment on video on mobile?
I think it goes the other way too. The video that you capture on your phone, being able to upload it to the screen, up to the web immediately or up to a screen immediately, that creates a lot of, user-generated political comment, a lot of,
there's a lot of the on-site reporting, actually.
A lot of on-site reporting.
London and Spain bombings. So.
The first images that we've seen of almost every disaster have been cell phone images. So, last question.
Yeah, I'm just curious. What do you guys see that will bring down a little bit the price of mobile usage in the U.S.?
Competition.
Do you see like in Europe, what brought down the prices were virtual network providers?
Yeah, I think the MVNOs, which is the mobile virtual network operators, have had a little bit of a tougher go of it in the U.S., as did many of the MVNOs in Europe. My feeling is that the competition is still so intense, especially among the top four carriers and increasingly players like Altel and others, that the pricing is getting lowered. I mean, this unlimited price war, $99 for unlimited plans is a big deal, and I think is going to continue. So I think the U.S. with all its communications technology has a lean towards flat rate, and I think mobile will enjoy the same benefits.
Like, do you think like in a year or 2 years or?
That crystal ball. Yeah. I want to say 2008 is the year of the mobile, but then again, I said that.
I mean, it directly affects what you were talking about the video.
Any
video is not going to happen until this is happening.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it is happening now, and I think you'll see sort of unlimited packages be a very, very big topic in the next year as to what percentage of the base is, it's anybody's guess.
If you do get out the vote stuff, I mean, SMS is the cheapest way to get out a vote. Far cheaper than anything else, effectively. So, if you think about it, 362 per vote, that's pretty cheap. So if your political campaign, think SMS. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Well done.